We love to be in love. At least it would seem so based on popular culture. We're always making new songs and movies about the people we see who will change our lives for the better forever. Then we step back and look at things like the divorce rate and realize that real life is a bit rougher than our fantasies of romantic love. Today's guest wrote a short book with a long title on this matter. Jacob Z. Hess is the author of Once Upon a Time, He Wasn't Feeling It Anymore, What's Killing Romance in America and What to Do About It. Dr. Jacob Hess got his PhD in clinical community psychology and is the co-founder of a nonprofit addressing depression and anxiety called All of Life. He's been a guest before. He and Phil Neisser co-wrote a book about conservative-liberal relations called You're Not As Crazy As I Thought, But You're Still Wrong. Jacob Hess, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. I really appreciate you letting me come.
Well, you know, your earlier appearance actually with Phil Neisser actually got you also onto This American Life. I don't know if you're aware of that.
That's right. We appreciate you a lot.
We didn't have any idea that they were going to do that, but there it was on our own airwaves one weekend. But the point is that here you are in this book with Phil Neisser making it sound like conservatives and liberals can get along, but then this next book, you're talking about romance dying?
That's right. It's been a personal interest for a long time, and certainly not a conservative issue or a liberal issue. I interviewed people who were pagan, religious, all sorts of backgrounds for the book, and found some really common concerns. And, you know, romance is supposed to be a sweet part of our lives. It's supposed to be something that is uplifting, but everywhere I looked and interviewed, people are having a lot of heartache, and not just once or twice, but serial breakups, not just of marriages, but before people even commit, just some really heartbreaking stories, and that's what kind of drove me to the research.
Well, it seems like you're drawn to subject matter that people don't want to discuss at dinner parties. Conservatives and liberals on one hand and romance in America on the other.
Well, I think romance is something that people have a natural hunger for, and we're told all around us by the larger American culture that we're going to help you find this, you know, this experience of romance. But when people download the script they're receiving from the dominant culture and run with it, they're not finding it, or at least not for long, except in short little bursts. And so I was intrigued at how many people are writing about this right now, Jeff. Secular authors, feminist authors, religious authors, people are saying, what's up with romance in America? And that's, again, my interest in it is just to explore that a little more.
This is a complicated title. Again, it's in our version, it's Once Upon, and this is a pre-publication edition, but Once Upon a Time, He Wasn't Feeling It Anymore, What's Killing Romance in America and What to Do About It, and then there's a subtitle, A Guide for the Undecided Couple. Let's focus first on the Once Upon a Time, He Wasn't Feeling It Anymore. This is a bit of a play on the way that fairy tales tend to end, and a more modern version of it, it sounds like.
That's right. Over and over in the interviews I conducted, I had couples telling me, individuals telling me that they were in love, that they had met the person of their dreams, and that they were in wedding planning mode, and they were excited. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, they weren't feeling it anymore. And I heard this over and over and over, and I document that in the book. And really, the question I'm exploring is just, why is this happening? And why does it seem to be happening more? Kind of this ultra transience, where relationships, you know, people are really head over heels, and then they're not. And so there's a lot of attention right now on beauty and body image and sexuality. I wanted to bring more attention to actually the role of this feeling in relationships and why it seems to be passing so quickly.
It almost sounds like a disease that you get better from or something, the way some of these people describe it. Like they wake up and, I just wasn't feeling the same.
Yeah, like you check your temperature in the morning, and, you know, it was a great date last night, or you've been having fun, but this morning, not so much. And so maybe I don't love this person anymore, and maybe I don't want to even spend any time anymore. Maybe I'm not even going to call them anymore. And, you know, is that how love is supposed to be? Is love really just synonymous with this feeling of excitement?
And are you letting either gender off the hook for this sudden drop in feelings?
Certainly I had more men tell me that than women, but I had women tell me the same story. So it's too easy to just put this on the men. It does seem to be a cultural thing happening, and I quote Stephanie Kuntz in the book. She's a historian, and she writes that everywhere relations between men and women are undergoing rapid and at times traumatic transformation. In fact, the relations between men and women have changed more in the past 30 years than they did in the previous 3,000. So this is the kind of statement that is leading a lot of people to think, what is going on around us and what can we do to kind of help neutralize some of this if we'd like to be in lasting relationships?
Is part of the issue then the way we're defining things, though? And now that I've started this question, I realize we have to run up to a break. So I'll get asked the question on the other side of it. Jacob Hess, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, his book, Once Upon a Time, He Wasn't Feeling It Anymore, What's Killing Romance in America and What to Do About It. Let's get your thoughts about romance in America, the current state of affairs, what our expectations are, what they really should be, and what we're doing wrong. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with Jacob Hess when we come back from this break, back here in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is psychologist Jacob Hess. He joined us a while back with co-author Phil Neisser to talk about conservative-liberal relations in the book, You're Not As Crazy As I Thought, But You're Still Wrong. His latest book is about romantic love, or the lack thereof, in America. It's called Once Upon a Time, He Wasn't Feeling It Anymore, What's Killing Romance in America and What to Do About It. Now, here's a fertile field for some discussion, if you'll pardon the expression and the use of the term fertile. Let's move ahead in the conversation. You can join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. When we talk about the problems with romance in America, romantic love, is part of the issue just a set of definitions? Are we defining love too broadly? That the stirrings and the feelings we have for people, infatuation onto, truly hot for somebody, that these are all termed love when, in fact, love may be something a little more enduring and less heated?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I would even argue that we're defining love a little too narrowly. Like, love, you know you love somebody when you feel this. And we all know how to feel in that blink, like that this hypersexual arousal where you almost worship the individual you're with. And when that feeling is gone, maybe you don't love them. Maybe it wasn't right. Maybe it's time to move on. And it's almost like this constricting narrowing of love that is leading people to even do things they later regret, like, why did I just stop calling that person? They're amazing.
It's almost like hormones in, hormones out then. I mean, they really get attracted to somebody because of almost a physical feeling, and when the physical feeling wears off, I'm not in love anymore.
That's right. And precisely, if we define love in those terms, then it leads to certain kinds of behaviors. It's like the... I'm a narrative psychologist, so what we say is we don't just tell stories, we live them out. So if our story of love is as you're saying it, then we end up doing things like feeling driven towards somebody and then equally driven away from them, and we're ultra tentative. So these are some of the patterns I explore. People can be so tentative, like, I think I'm really into you, but I'm not sure. Let's see how I feel tomorrow. And it creates this kind of torture chamber where a couple who has great potential can just be unsure. And ultimately, I write about relationships being crushed by the expectations we put on them. And these are relationships with potential, Jeff. These are not the kind of relationships that never have a chance. It's like people who are amazing being driven away from each other by a story.
Crushed by expectations then suggests that we very much have an inability to take things slowly.
Yeah, I think we go really fast, and I advocate in the book, I teach mindfulness-based stress reduction. That's my favorite thing in all the world. And if we slowed things down a bit, came from a deeper place, and certainly feelings are an important part of it, but if we come from a more grounded place and are able to make decisions rather than being driven to and from people and get away from that drivenness.
All right, this is not just general theoretical research. I mean, you did interview a fair number of people. What was that number?
It was close to 100. I'm still interviewing. I'm gathering stories. So part of the invitation for people, you know, who come to the website, and the book is on Amazon, but I'd like to continue the research because it's just so fascinating to hear how this crosses political lines, religious lines. I thought it was kind of this unique cultural thing. But it's certainly, you know, when I interviewed my pagan neighbor, he told me the same stories that religious people did. So, about breaking his girlfriend's heart because he stopped feeling it and he just stopped calling her, you know?
So it transcended usual community boundaries, and it wasn't something that a certain religious tradition would produce and another one wouldn't.
Right.
Let's take a call. We have Sandy on Mount Shasta on the line. We're talking to Jacob Hess about his book, Once Upon a Time, He Wasn't Feeling It Anymore. We're talking about romance in America.
Yeah, hi, guys. Boy, this is a subject I'm interested in. I was a little disappointed to find out I couldn't search your book on Amazon or Google like I usually try to do before I call in so I can make more intelligent comments. But I'm curious to know if you encountered the research work of, say, Sue Johnson, a psychotherapist up in Vancouver, B.C., who has written some books on a similar subject about, and particularly pointed out, and others have too, that work in attachment theory shows that you can't maintain that initial rush of love that you feel early in a relationship for more than a few months. It's physically, physiologically impossible. And what often happens when people find their interest diminishing, they jump to the wrong conclusion. I think this is the same direction you're headed in. Uh-oh, I must have made a mistake. And it's like we don't really understand romance or the function of love or attachment widely enough for people to get that, oh, okay, this is a predictable phase of a relationship that I'm going through. And I don't want to jump to a conclusion that I've picked the wrong person. Let me see if what can be done to help kind of shift this love from the sort of intense romantic I'm crazy about you phase to, hey, I think you're a pretty cool person, I'd like to share my life with you kind of a phase. Mm-hmm. Have you encountered any research like that?
All right. Thanks for the call, for the question, sure. Sandy.
Beautiful. I mean, I think you're right on. What you're doing is you're pointing out that the actual physiological research and the wisdom of our body tells another story about love as something akin to the attachment process that happens with our children, where they grow in attachment and recognizing that that early phase of intense passion never lasts forever, including for Brad and Angelina, you know, it doesn't matter. For everyone, it's a period that kind of gets us started. But interestingly enough, there's another study that shows 65% of respondents believed that if the early stages of passion didn't last, it wasn't true love. So our cultural beliefs about love are running directly contrary to what the physiological research is actually showing. Thanks for pointing that out. And I'm sorry, I thought the book is available on Amazon, but it's pretty new, so...
Not searchable, I guess, is what Sandy was saying, so you couldn't get into the guts of it all.
Okay.
This really gets down to, then, this expectation that there's going to be some sort of spark outside of the control of the person. There are people like Harville Hendricks who've written about the process of re-romanticizing a relationship, doing things for each other like you did when it was new and the feelings were fresh, and you can restore some of those feelings. In addition to the things that really need to be there for a long-term relationship, like liking a person, liking to be around them.
Absolutely. And the message here is not that you need to just give up on that spark and, you know, move beyond it. This is not an anti-relationship conversation, an anti-romance message. It's a pro-romance message. It's like how to recognize a more comfortable level of romance throughout a relationship. Whereas if we're demanding a hyper intense experience all the time, good luck maintaining a relationship. But certainly in a long term relationship, just like you say, we can do things to cultivate a deep, wide, comfortable brand. It's kind of like rebranding romance to be a much more nuanced and diverse concept than the dominant culture has made it.
Because let's face it, even our cars get old after a while and don't go as fast as they once did. So we have to be prepared for a little less power. We're talking to Jacob Hess about his book, Once Upon a Time, He Wasn't Feeling It Anymore, What's Killing Romance in America and What to Do About It. This is a conversation you can join. Is romance dying in America? You can decide if you agree or not with the general hypothesis and how we approach it if it is, in fact, in trouble. Join us on The Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Jeannie had called just a bit ago and just left her question with us, Jacob, which is she wants to know if love is like other things that are addictive. When you get a lot, your resistance to it goes up, and you need more and more until nothing is enough.
I have been reviewing some of the research that, you know, with any addiction, if you get the dopamine going in your brain enough, then anything normal around is just not enough. So there's actually, the American Psychological Association released a study on the sexualization of women in America. And right in the middle of that report is a really interesting line that one consequence of just being surrounded and inundated by sexually charged images that really get our brains going is that single individuals are not feeling attracted to other normal individuals. Like, it's almost like the range of attractiveness is narrowing, fitting the hypothesis of the caller that we get so stimulated by the hypersexual images around us that these normal-looking people around us just start to be less and less interesting.
Anything less than the fabulousness of a Beyonce just won't do it for a man.
That's right.
There's an interesting approach you took, and I noticed that as the book goes on, you tend to flip things around and look at questions from the other side. And so one of the approaches you took in your research, it sounds like, was asking the question of, if we wanted to kill romance, what would we do? And what were the findings you had there?
Yeah, I mean, this is what I do in my depression class and in all of life, this organization we have. We kind of teach classes. And if you imagine, if we wanted to create depression in a world, what would we do? What kind of world would we create? Like Sim City, that video game. And doing the same with romance, I think if you expose people every day to just all sorts of images of how love is supposed to be and make sure that they're all really uniformly narrow with certain kinds of bodies and that the experience, make sure all the actors have British accents, the men do, you know, so that we hone our expectations to this very narrow product. And we could talk about the commodification and how we've made romance into this product that is supposed to look a certain way. And then anybody whose experience deviates from that might really feel dissatisfied and decide, you know, I got to go get the latest product because this person I'm with, this experience I'm having is, I deserve better, you know? So
when you talk about it like a product, it really does sound like that there's a bit of consumer culture that has leaked over. I mean, when the fact is that you're constantly getting bombarded with ideas like, hey, that phone you got 6 months ago is garbage. You need to have this one now because it's really new and cool. You need to have this stereo, this car, this food product, whatever. You know, it seems like that if any of that leaks into romance, that would be a bit of a situation.
No, exactly. I mean, it's happening for all of us. I think it's a miracle any relationship survives in our day. You know, I learned a lot watching my father. When my mother got cancer, she went through treatments. Her body became like a 90-year-old woman. And I watched my father choose to love her more, not less, not to run away from mom. But he did things to make sure she felt beautiful, even though she didn't look it, you know? And so that kind of experience just inspires me, and I feel like we have, all of us, the potential, when the feelings settle, and this is really the bottom line in the book, when the feelings settle in a relationship, that could actually be a great opportunity to show more love and to practice true love, meaning it's not about yourself anymore. We're not getting, you know, it's not about the self-absorbed early states of romance. It's about, am I going to be there for this person? Even though it's not just self-absorbed, all my needs getting met. And many, many couples are saying, yes, I am. You know, this person's needs are as real as my own. I'm gonna truly love them. So it's exciting. It's a definition of love that leads in all the different directions, and it leads to something more lasting.
In the context you just mentioned, though, with your parents, and particularly with couples who've been together for a long time, though, it suggests that we can appreciate greater nuance as we get older anyway. So the kind of relationship a person, say, in their 40s or 50s want to have is very different from the kind of relationship a person in their 20s wants to have, simply because life experience, expectations, the need to be around bright lights, big cities, loud music, all those things have just changed. The edges have come off. You know, they've been sanded off in a sense.
Yeah, well said. It's moving precisely in the opposite direction from this other pattern of a literal de-learning of love, where people lose almost, there's an incapacity to love that's developing. In the other direction, you see couples with this deepening love, this level of rich love that goes beyond any of the early passion stages. And it's a new kind of passion and a broader passion and a diversified passion, yeah. I like how you said it.
Among the people that you've interviewed then for Once Upon a Time, He Wasn't Feeling It Anymore, did you find a fair number of people with regrets who thought, you know, I really was fine with that person. It's just that I just didn't feel a spark anymore. I mean, did you hear a lot of that?
A lot of people telling me, oh, I can't believe I walked away from this person. They were amazing. They were a great match for me. But based on, you know, and my interpretation of it is based on those narrow criteria, you know, by which we're judging relationships, they walked away from a great option. And equally so, those narrow criteria are leading people to commit to somebody who's not that good of a match just because they were feeling it for a while. So it leads, you know, it leads to these bad matches, and kind of we overlook people that might be really good fits for us.
I have to give you credit for fessing up in your own book, because the fact is you went through something like this with your high school sweetheart, didn't you, Jacob?
Oh, yeah, and that's how it all got started with me, is I walked away from an amazing individual more than once because I wasn't feeling how I was supposed to, and even in an engagement where I'd met somebody amazing, but feeling almost driven by these expectations that, well, you can't be with somebody if you're not feeling head over heels all the time. And then we treat people who could be amazing companions like they're not worth it. And so there's some real heartbreak and healing that needs to happen from the heartbreak.
Well, and this is you mentioned this story in chapter 3 of the book, which is about being driven in love. And when you say driven in love, what does that mean?
It's kind of the opposite of mindful love, where we're actually making choices based on what we really want. Driven means we're just reacting, and we're reacting to situations. Hey, I'm in a situation, this doesn't feel good, I don't like it. And literally, you know, going back to the earlier caller, we can move into a fight or flight mode where we feel boxed in and trapped. And then anything that makes us feel differently, whether it's porn or an affair or just walking away, you know, and then we do things that really break, really hurt people and hurt us. And so I think, again, the mindful approach to this all is a rich way to think about it, coming from a more grounded place where we may decide that this relationship isn't the right one, and we may decide we need to move on, but we're doing it because we want to, and because that's really the wise skillful response, not because we're driven to and we have to.
We have so much more to talk about when we talk about romance in America and the current state of affairs there. Jacob Hess is a psychologist. His book is Once Upon a Time, He Wasn't Feeling It Anymore. We'll come back and talk more about romance in America today and what's happening to it and what our concerns about it might be and what our solutions might be. All coming up on the Jefferson Exchange with Jacob Hess and you, back on the program in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is psychologist Dr. Jacob Z. Hess. He got his PhD in clinical community psychology. He's the co-founder of a nonprofit addressing depression and anxiety. It is called All of Life. His latest book is called Once Upon a Time, He Wasn't Feeling It Anymore. What's Killing Romance in America and What to Do About It? A discussion of romantic love and the issues we create for ourselves, really, culturally, hormonally, intellectually, and so on, and how they all come together and what we can do about it. Join us on the Exchange. Much to talk about here. Our phone number is 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Have you reached a conclusion then, Jacob, in the sense that when people are, I mean, because I think all of us know at least somebody who, you know, they got together within 6 months and started heading down the path toward marriage and have been able to stay together successfully for decades. But is that more the exception, that once the ardor burned off, they really were still with somebody they liked a lot and wanted to hang around with?
It's becoming more and more the exception. And the hope, and you know, the conclusion I reached to is a bigger story about romance can make a difference precisely in those moments. In those moments where we think, oh no, the feeling has settled, that means I got to run. Whether before marriage or after, if there's a bigger story, we can kind of have some space around that moment and say, now hold on, you know, I committed to this person for lots of reasons, and I'm in this relationship for a variety of reasons. And look at all the data available instead of just basing our decision solely on the feeling, whether the feeling is there as much as it's supposed to be. So broadening the conversation broadens the experience, so we have some space to make a decision. And we may walk away or we may stay with it, but we're choosing. And so my bottom line is there are amazing individuals out there who are running away from each other. And so maybe a bigger conversation about romance can give those relationships a shot.
So you mentioned mindfulness several times now, but is the real point then for all of us to be more conscious in love?
Yeah, I think that's a nice way to say it. Jon Kabat-Zinn out at UMass has done all this work around making mindfulness less scary for Americans. And I think mindfulness and just stopping and really breathing and grounding, that, you know, that can help couples make decisions they don't regret later on.
Is the key to think about this early in or before a relationship? I mean, you see so many things out there still, and I see the cover of Cosmopolitan every time I go to the supermarket, and I guess we need not go down with things on the cover of that. But the point is that there are all these things about, you know, make a list, you know, does this person meet your needs? In some ways, it seems like we're overthinking it, but at the same time, not thinking enough.
Well said. I think it's true that, you know, we get in relationships and we're ruminating and talking to everybody and, like, we're in our heads and we're, you know, we go over and over and over, but as we all know, when we're in our heads, we're not always, like, coming from our heart or even, like, listening to our body. And so kind of an embodied knowing where we're coming from a deeper place and not just operating off of some thought that somebody told us or some story.
I guess it's not like other things. It's like you can show somebody how to hold a fork and use a napkin and all that stuff, but you really can't teach people how to be in love, can you?
Well, art. And I love to think about it as a practice. You know, people talk about love, it's just a choice. I don't think so. I think it's more of a practice that, like you said earlier, if we've committed to someone, are we doing what love needs to thrive? And just like any practice, when you start to play tennis or chess or meditate, you're not any good at it. And so, and that's different than our culture tells us. You know, we assume that love is something anyone can do, and it's just easy, and it's supposed to be easy. But what if love was a practice, and this romance thing was more of an art, and it took a lot of heart and mind and consciousness and awareness, you know? It's still fun, but it's fun in a different way.
There's a sense, I think, of weightlessness, isn't there, in romance, that everything should just come naturally, you know, there are no problems, nobody leaves dirty dishes around the house, etc. When you get into an environment with each other, as a romantic couple, you start finding out things that annoy each other.
That's right. And what do we do about that? You know, do we just, you know, throw up our hands in horror to discover that we're with a real human being? Or do we allow them to be a real human being and start to relate to them as that, instead of this goddess or god or demigod, you know, that we've worshipped when they come down from their pedestal? Can we still love? And that's, you know, for me, that's what separates people who know true love from those who don't. It's not just meeting the right person. It's can you love them when in those crucial moments? And for a lot of people, it's no, they can't. They have to have this experience, and perhaps that's what they want. So ultimately, it's deciding what kind of love do you want. You know, there are some people that just want the short, exciting blurbs, and when that's over, they want to move on. And for many others, that's not enough. They do want something longer term, deeper, broader, more authentic.
And a bit mellower, I suppose, too, but certainly not burning with the same embers at the beginning, but good, slow, steady pilot light, I guess we'll call it. Let's take a call from Chris in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Jacob Hess about romance in America.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have been listening to this, and I find it very intriguing. I'm in my mid-60s, and I find that almost everything I agree with, very emphatically, and so I have to kudos to your author. How old is he?
Jacob, you're being asked how old you are.
I'm 36.
Good. Perfect age to be talking about these things. So I agree with everything you said. The one thing that I find not disagreeing with, but a little bit, maybe you're just not there yet, is that as I have aged, so in my 20s and 30s, I think that the things that you talked about, image and about the sort of dramatic things that we see on TV and movies, I think that is correct. However, I find that my range of acceptability and attraction to women as being heterosexual has increased. And so instead of looking at just, you know, the Playboy, Playmate model and things like that and having that particular idea as the only thing you can have, I find that as I have aged, the range of beauty that I find in pretty much every woman that I see, and I'm not trying to be pernicious or anything like that, I find beauty and intensity and intrigue in pretty much anybody who's willing to be sort of in present time with me. And I'm not talking just sexually. I'm talking just as people. And I find
they're just interesting people more generally, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I find that women, I find a wider and wider and wider range of beauty in women and sexual attraction, even though I'm not going to do anything with it because that's just not where I'm at. But I find them more and more beautiful and intriguing as I get older.
Yeah.
The age range and the size and height and weight and ethnicity, all that is just dissolving. And so this, the only thing that I would say is that I think perhaps your research is and I don't know for sure, is focused on a particular age group or within a general age group. And I think as we get older, those barriers either go away or get tighter.
Okay, let's find out from Jacob. Thanks for the call, Chris. Appreciate it. So Jacob, of the hundred or so people you've interviewed so far, and the research is continuing, as you pointed out, is there a pretty broad age range, or is it a little more narrowly focused?
It's true. I've talked to a lot of younger people. It's also true that there's a narrowing happening and a broadening. And I would just say that this says as much about your experience, the caller, as anything. I know people that grow older but don't they're not widening, and I know people who are younger who are also kind of broadening to this beauty. When my mother passed away, my father went out and started dating after, you know, the period of mourning. And every girl he went out with, he came home and told her, you know, she's amazing, she's beautiful, which was so different than the other stories I was hearing about bachelors who, they go out on, 25 first dates, and it's like, I don't know. For my father, it was like, wow, you know, there are these amazing people out there. And I asked myself, why is it different for Dad? And you know, he'd been practicing real love for 35 years. And as he goes out and actually just meets the people out there, he sees them as they are. Of course, it was funny when he came home after a girl broke up with him, you know, and he told us for years how easy it was. You should just go out and get married. And he's sitting there at the dinner table kind of crestfallen, and my brother says, not as easy as it looks, huh?
You know? I bet Dad really appreciated that.
Yeah, the older generation sometimes talks about this like, oh, it's easy. But for the younger generation, I think there is a lot more confusion. So I think it's accurate that there are definitely generational things going on.
Well, your dad certainly came from a generation in which there was dating and still was for him after your mother passed on. But you've got a whole section in here on the death of dating. What has replaced it in younger generations?
Well, particularly on college campuses, I was at the University of Illinois, and what you do now is you go to a bar, you kind of get a little alcohol in you, and you go home together, and you have you sleep together, and then this is widely written about, that dating isn't happening a lot in campuses where you go out and you focus on individuals. Another thing that's happening is just the group hangout, where you just hang out and it's very casual and you get a text from somebody that says, what's up, you know, what you doing, and you get together. And there's some New York Times articles on this, but it's, you know, it takes zero effort, zero commitment, and it's just the lowest common denominator. So my hope is that we just broaden the conversation. There's so many thoughtful people writing about this. I was so touched to read some of the other research out there. So I'm optimistic that we all have a capacity to love. This is not like something you have to go to some training program to do, but we've been socialized out of it, or we've been psyched out of it. And as soon as that broader story is in place, I find a lot of people just coming to life, like, oh, I can do this. I can love like real human beings. I don't have to search for a demigod. So that's the hopeful message.
I have to wonder then if maybe a hookup culture might actually work in favor of romance, because nobody's really attaching romance to sexual liaisons then. And so later on, when a lot of the wild oats have been sown, that they might just be ready for a romantic relationship that is less based on sexuality.
Well, it's true. People get tired of it. And they kind of realize, you know, this isn't what they want. But it's also true, there's some evidence that as that happens over and over, particularly for men, if it's this continued, you know, short bursts of romance, that they can, one author talked about a de-learning of love, kind of a growing incapacity to love and treat people like more than just objects. So there is a possibility of getting to the point where you're just objectifying everyone, and you just forget how to treat this person in front of you as, you know, as that caller so nicely said, you know, just really real human beings who are beautiful.
And the whole second part of the book is about flirting with another love story, so talking about ways to go about changing things around here. And when you talk about embracing a human being, for example, you're not talking about with your arms.
That's right. Allowing people to be real human beings with both good things and struggles, and allowing them to loving them as they are, where they are. And you could think of that as a practice in itself that we do even with non-romantic relationships. Can we do it in romance, or does romance have to have these special rules where we have to have all these other criteria met in order to value someone? And I think, again, the wisdom of the body, the wisdom of traditions, you know, you look back on people who have written about love, there's a lot of reasons to look at a bigger story.
In the section when you write about watching for a good fit, and this will probably be our last question here, I mean, do you go into this with the lists that Cosmo et al. Suggest, where, you know, if the person meets 75% of your needs, it's okay? Or is it, I mean, at what point do you let the intellectual stop and let the feelings take over, or vice versa?
Great question. What I encourage people to do is to look back on all your relationships and just think of your own experiences that have been comfortable, where you've just been able to talk with someone. And allow your own experience to indicate to you what is a good match for you. And you know, even when there is a challenging match, where a marriage isn't easy, you can learn in that challenge to develop and grow a whole lot. I'm certainly learning that in my own marriage. We've got two kids now, and so the match thing can be idealized too. We can shoot for this perfect match that we'll never find, or we can say, okay, I'm here with this person, and this feels like good to follow. Let's do it.
The book is called Once Upon a Time, He Wasn't Feeling It Anymore, What's Killing Romance in America and What to Do About It. Jacob Hess wrote it, and he's been our guest on the Jefferson Exchange today. Jacob, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.
You bet. That'll do it for today's exchange. You can find out more about the program and subjects and suggest guests at jeffexchange.org. You can also find show topics and recordings on our Facebook page and Twitter. If you're listening in the morning, the takeaway is coming up next. If you're listening to our evening rebroadcast, we are followed by news from the BBC. Monday on The Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about a possible way around food stamp cuts. At 8:30, we'll talk about the Eugene City Council banning neonicotinoid pesticides. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll talk about a new study showing the benefits of rainforests in our part of the world. That's all Monday on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer and today's engineer and First Friday co-host, Charlotte Duren. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Join us again Monday at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio, and have a great weekend.